and the astronaut satisfied that they were properly sealed up, Carlton asked, "Just how much time can you spare to examine the village?" Jamie recognized the sarcasm in his voice, the anger. "An hour," he said, stepping to the airlock hatch. "Then we've got to go up the cable with Hasdrubal and spend the night in the dome up on the plane." "1 hour," Carlton muttered. Jamie glanced at Dex. From the expression on his face, Jamie could see that even Dex recognized the bitterness in Carlton's tone. "That's one pissed-off anthropologist," Dex said as he walked between Jamie and Hasdrubal toward the cable lifts running along the cliff face. "Did you want to stay longer?" Jamie asked. With a small shrug, Dex said, "Might have been interesting, poking around those building foundations, looking into the graves." Hasdrubal said, "Carlton wouldn't let you touch anything." "Yeah, I can understand why. And maybe," Jamie thought silently, "you'll be able to understand why we can't have tourists poking around the village." They reached the base of the cable and started to clip the harnesses over their suits. Jamie watched Dex closely. He had no problems with the harness, and he seemed to be more at ease wearing the molecule-thin nanosuit. "We're going to stop and look at the cliff structures on the way up?" Dex asked. "Tomorrow," said Jamie. "On the way down." Hasdrubal made a low, chuckling sound. "If we stop now to look at the structures, Carlton would shoot us in the back with one of the digging lasers." Jamie laughed. But when they started up on the cables, he could see the team of people digging away industriously at the excavation. One person, though, was standing at the edge of the pit watching them, fists on his hips. Even at this distance, Jamie could sense the anger radiating from the anthropologist. Dithonium Base, evening.
"Jamie's gone daft,"
Vijay said to herself as she watched her husband, Dex, and Hasdrubal striding from Carlton's excavation out toward the buckyball cables that ran up the seamed sheer face of the cliff to the plain up at the top. It was almost sunset, and the shadows of the three men stretched out across the uneven, rock-covered ground like fingers straining for a prize they could not reach. The three of them had stopped briefly at the excavation. At the edge of the pit, Jamie pointed here and there while the other two stood beside him. Then they moved on.
"Jamie wants to get to the cable lifts before it gets dark," Vijay told herself. "But Dex is only here for 2 more days, and Jamie's spending more than half that time trotting him out to that crater," Vijay thought. "Why is he doing that?"
With a shake of her head, she kept staring through the transparent wall of the dome, watching the three nanosuited figures walking away.
"Like three little boys going out on an adventure," she realized. "Jamie's turning his back on his responsibilities. Dex is, too. They ought to know better."
With a helpless sigh, Vijay commanded herself, "Go back to your room, wash your face, get ready for dinner. Alone." Yet she stood there and watched the three men moving away from her. "He's really a fanatic, isn't he?" Turning, she saw Carter Carlton standing beside her, his usual self-assured smile totally gone. He looked angry.
"No? Jamie's not a fanatic," she said. "He's dedicated."
"He's supposed to be showing Trumbull the work we're doing here. Look at them. They hardly glanced at my excavation."
"I know," Vijay said. "I really don't understand what Jamie's up to."
"Whatever it is, he doesn't think my work is very important, does he?"
"It's not that. There's something going on inside his head, but I don't know what it is."
Vijay kept staring at the dwindling figures as she spoke.
"I wonder if Jamie himself knows what it is."
"A fanatic," Carlton muttered. She could hear the resentment in his voice.
"Dedicated," she repeated.
Carlton fairly glared at her. But then he made a tentative smile and said, "I see. I am dedicated. You are a fanatic." Vijay shook her head.
"A fanatic is someone who doubles his efforts after he's forgotten his aim. Jamie hasn't forgotten his aim."
"For if I should despair, I should go mad," Carlton quoted.
"Jamie hasn't despaired."
"Not yet."
"Not ever."
He touched her back lightly with just the tips of his fingers and gestured toward the cafeteria with his free hand. "May I invite you to dinner?" VJ thought about it a moment, glanced again at the dwindling figures of the three men, then back at Carlton's handsome face. The anger was still in his eyes, but he was making himself smile at her.
"I don't like to eat alone," he said, almost gently.
"Neither do I," said VJ.
"Let me wash up first."
"Certainly," his smile broadened. "Meet you in the cafeteria in half an hour?"
"Fine."
All through dinner, VJ tried to get a reading on Carlton. She knew his dossier by heart, knew how he'd been ruined by a charge of rape that he strenuously denied. He had been stripped of his professorship and tenure. His wife had left him. His fellow anthropologists treated him as a pariah. His career, his life, were ruined. So he came to Mars and made the biggest discovery since somebody stumbled over the bones of Neanderthal man. The irony was cosmic. "Something's amusing you?" Carlton asked from across the table. Their dinners were long finished. Even the fruit pies they had taken for dessert were nothing more than crumbs now.
"Just thinking about the weird turns that fight takes," she said. "You had to come all the way out here to Mars to find vindication."
He steepled his fingers in front of his face. "Vindication? That's a strange word to use."
VJ said, "I mean, if the fundamentalists believe in divine guidance, then they've got to admit that your discovery of the village here must be God's way of showing that the accusations against you were false."
Still half hiding his face, Carlton replied in a low, strained voice, "No, they'd never admit that they were wrong. That they got that woman to perjure herself? Never."
"But
they're the fanatics, VJ. Real fanatics. They'd do anything to further their cause. Give them enough power and they'll start burning people at the stake again." There was real fury in his tone now. Hatred.
"Good," she thought. "Don't repress it. Let it out. You'll be cock of the walk when you return to Earth. You can wave your discovery under their noses."
"If I return to Earth."
"If?"
VJ felt startled. "I decided when I came here to Mars that I wasn't going to look backward. I wasn't going to let them turn me into a bitter old man. Now, well, why should I go back? What's back there for me except pain and sorrow?"
He feels sorry for himself, VJ realized. "Can't say I blame him."
She said, "But you can go back in triumph. You can have your pick of university posts." He thought a moment. "I wonder. The new morality controls most of the academic establishment these days."
"But you..."
"Don't you know that the Mars Foundation can't even get the news nets to carry a documentary about my village? They're blocking us out."
"Jamie mentioned something about that," she murmured.
"No, I think I'll stay right here," Carlton said. "I can do some really important work here, no matter how they ignore me back home. I can have some respect here, despite clowns like Larkin."
Better to reign in hell, VJ thought, than to serve in heaven.
But she asked, "What if Jamie has to close down the whole operation?" With a shrug, "We'll cross that bridge when we come to it." VJ couldn't think of anything to say except,
"I don't think that's a very healthy attitude. You've got to prepare for problems before they hit you."
He turned on his smile, but there was sadness in it. "Don't worry about my attitude. I'm a healthy enough man, VJ." She thought she detected just the slightest emphasis on the word man. They picked up their dirty dishes and deposited them in a slowly revolving drum that fed the microwave cleaning unit. As they started out of the cafeteria, toward the living units on the other side of the dome, Carlton asked, "My place or yours?" VJ looked sharply at him. He was smiling again, but it looked just a bit forced to her. "You'd better stop this right here and now," she told herself. "Don't let him get any ideas about you." A different voice in her mind countered, "Not that he doesn't have ideas already."
"You go to your place and I'll go to mine," she said firmly.
Keeping pace beside her, Carlton said, "I thought we might have a nightcap. I still have some of that single malt I told you about."
"No thanks, Carter."
"Scared?" She hesitated a heartbeat, then admitted,
"Yes, a little." Strangely, he chuckled.